You ready? Oh, so actually, I should just tell you that that show will air on Wednesday the 6th. Okay? This one won't air till the 20th because they're going to come in next week and do a timely show. Okay? So this show that I'm about to tape with Aldie Milliken will air on January 20th, 2016.
January 20th?
Yeah.
January 20th, 2016.
Exactly.
Wow. What will I be doing January 20th, 2016?
I don't know.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Let's think about that. This is an evening. This is evening, too.
This is the evening. Yeah, you got to act
evening.
Sleepy.
Act sleepy. This is, you're on your way home from work. It's 6:30.
Exactly. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, your favorite listening. Show on the radio.
Yes. Okay. Let's fill the blank canvas.
Yeah. All right. I'm ready to sound check. No?
No?
He's good? Okay.
Are we good? We're going to let it run? We're going?
We're going to let it run. Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget you can download the app from www.guardiantalkradio.com. That will allow you to call in and text, which you cannot do for us because we are pre-tape, because I just like to get home and have dinner with my kids, so sorry about that. But anyhow, you can always go to the Facebook page, which is NAGB Blank Canvas, and you can leave comments there and communicate us through the Facebook page. So this evening, I have another international visitor. I know we had one 2 weeks ago, and we're just getting all these visitors now because the Bahamas is an awesome place to be. And, of course, it's been Junkanoo season, so that always brings a lot of people in. I have another colleague and dear friend. It's always shocking how many years we've known each other.
Yes,
but I was trying to count today, and I was like, I think met like 20 years ago,
It was
maybe?
About that 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and so Mr. Aldie Milliken. Aldie is the executive director and chief curator of the KMAC Museum in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, you've started rebranding the museum pretty heavily because the original name, the name you met when you started, was the Kentucky Museum of Art and Craft.
Yeah, actually, we've gone through a kind of a transition.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here. It's extraordinary to see what you're doing here in the community and to see how you're repositioning the role of a museum or an art gallery as a central focus point for conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of similarities between what we're doing in Louisville.
Yeah.
It's not just rebranding; it's actually rethinking what
the role of a
museum in a contemporary context.
And I think what's really interesting is that you and I both knew each other when we both had very different jobs.
Very different jobs.
And we both gave up very different lives. You were running your own gallery in Stockholm, Sweden.
Yep.
And I was running an art fair, and I was an art critic. And we both took on these institutions. And I think that we came from different fields, really.
Because
probably has something to do with the way we think about the institution.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we saw, maybe for me at least, that this was an incredible opportunity to reposition the institution. And I think our background relatively similar.
Yeah, and community build.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We always saw, we both worked in art galleries, in which, for the most part, we sold art, or I sold art anyway, and I was always missing the educational component or the way in which we could translate the role of the artist or the intention of the artist into a kind of a different world, not just a commercial space, but actually an educational space.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was what was extraordinary. I mean, my background, even before I met you, was that I was an elementary school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an incredibly dynamic job idea. And so I wanted to marry what I learned in the art gallery, the entrepreneurial attitudes, the role or the way in which I worked with artists, to the education component.
Well, and I think that's actually probably, you just hit a nail on the head, which is we were both entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And I think very often institutional directors, specifically in small communities,
yeah.
but I think they haven't been to date. It's
been seen as this kind
of cushy
that's
role
changing.
Where you come
that's
in
changing.
And,
yeah.
you know, you just put up the collection and in your case throw up some quilts and in my case throw up some.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we came in as like, no, we're going to make this operate like a business and we want to really, have action and foot traffic. And,
exactly. For me, sustainability was really important because in a way we thrive or we run on donations for at least a full third, if not half of our...
Just can you repeat that for my audience?
Yeah, so please donate
to
the National Art Gallery
Bahamas.
Buy
tickets.
No, and I think but it's not just a sort of a blind donation. People who have the money are investing in something.
Right.
And I, my role is to make sure that their investments are well taken care of.
But I think even people that, you know, I think a lot of people that don't, like, quote unquote, have the money.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of everything the museum offers.
Yeah.
So 3-4 openings a year with food and drink, free movies, free talks and discussions. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, we had the dean, the first African American dean of Yale down here speaking.
Yeah,
I mean, like, all for free.
Yeah. Well,
you
$5,
think even if you pay, like, exactly, like you buy a yearly membership, it's actually cheap. So,
yeah, it is cheap. No, you know. and that is an incredible investment in the future of the role of art in art society.
Exactly.
And I think that that's the one thing I try to convince people or talk to people. I mean, it's not about how much money you have. You get a lot from your art museum.
Mm-hmm.
If you use it.
If you use it,
of course, you have to engage.
Yes, yes.
And that's if you're an artist or if you're just a visitor passing through or if you're someone in the community with a couple of kids who...
Yeah.
Are looking for something to do.
Yeah.
We know it's been proven that children's test scores will be raised by 10% if they visit our museum twice a year.
And really?
Yeah. And
I've got to write that down. Test scores go up 10%.
Twice a year.
Do you hear that, people?
You are, and I'm throwing the total twice a year. I think you should go 4 times a year, but I think you should go once a month. Yeah.
No, I do.
Yeah, no, well, of course.
You know, sometimes when I lived in New York, one of the museums I loved the most was the Frick because it's a tiny little museum, right? And I always said, and then actually the Met started doing it too. They would do these shows that were like, just come look at one painting.
Yeah.
And just think about that one painting.
Exactly.
And they would do a little show about that one. And so, you know, you don't have to come and schlep through the whole place.
Yeah.
You could actually just come spend half an hour engaging with one work and thinking about it.
So you look at that one painting, and if you think about that one work, and how do you translate, or how do you give people the insight into that one piece?
Yeah,
the tools to look at that one piece. And I think that's what's so fascinating is that one piece of artwork sitting on a wall is there. It looks pretty, or it's interesting or dynamic, and it could be 100 years old, or it could be 10 years old, it could be 5 years old, but that piece...
It has a story.
It has an incredible story that goes to it. And I think it's not enough for that painting just to sit on the wall and gather dust. We have to activate it. We have to find ways to communicate the importance of that work.
So how are you doing that?
So I
Googled you so I could have your bio to read, which I didn't do in the end.
Well, I do.
But
I do,
and there was this whole article about how you painted the front of the museum orange and everybody was shocked.
I think we are constantly thinking about how the museum can be pushed, can be modified, can branch out into the community, can be, we've done shows in banks, in lobbies of banks. Banking culture is changing and bank lobbies are not used as much anymore. So the head of the bank goes to me and says, hey, let's do an installation in the middle of a bank. So I'm always looking for ways in which to push the role of the museum and getting it out there. But anyway, you asked me a different question that I'm going to have to really think about.
Oh.
I think it's
the tough questions on this show that the people want to hear.
So how do you do? So we do things. How do you activate that? We do scavenger hunts.
Yeah.
We try to get docent-led tours as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We try to be really accessible. So when someone is coming into the museum for the first time, or for any time, we try to greet them. We try to give them options. We say, hey, this is what you're going to see. This is what you can do. This is what we're providing for you. We do a lot of things that you're doing. You're doing outdoor movie nights. You're doing conversations with artists.
Mm-hmm.
We've painted even the first show that we did, which was on the Caribbean, actually.
Which is kind of interesting, we'll talk about that.
Which is super problematic. I don't know. Hopefully, your listeners have been to Louisville, Kentucky, but if you
haven't, I'm sure that many have not.
Well, I met a gentleman last night who was working on a Junkanoo work that he had relatives in Louisville. So
I'm sure that some people have. But I took Aldi last night to a couple of shacks to check out the process. But we'll talk about that later.
We have to talk about that. So let me, maybe what we should talk about first is, let me talk about KMAC a little bit.
Yes, please.
Just to position it.
Exactly. And how did you deal with that? Because that's the thing. That's why I think it's so interesting that you're here. And actually, even that first show you did, you inherited a museum with the word craft in the title.
Yeah.
And people have very specific ideas about what craft is.
Yes, it is. Very traditional ideas. Very much about romanticizing a cultural identity. And that, unfortunately, that cultural identity often does not exist anymore.
Right.
Or that cultural identity was really for one
group of people.
And I'll say it here. Maybe I did a little bit of difficulty saying it in Louisville, but it was really for upper class Caucasian and in general women that wanted to buy Kentucky craft. They wanted to push Kentucky craft in New York.
Right.
And, you know, Louisville's a really small town in a small state.
And I would imagine that a lot of your audience is predominantly not Caucasian women.
Exactly. Well, that and also that was it was almost kind of a completely fabricated idea in a
right.
sense. They wanted to do a good thing. They wanted to help support artists, but ultimately, that wasn't the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Artists artists have a complicated relationship to commerce. So the minute someone else is telling an artist that they should make this because it'll sell better in the shop. In my opinion, that's not art anymore.
Right.
And so that is not what the role of the museum is supposed to do. We have an educational mission. It connects people to art. That is all.
I, in fact, tell people when I commission them to do work at the museum, I say, don't think about selling. This is the one place you don't need to worry about that.
No, this is where you want to explore ideas.
Explore and exactly.
We want to inspire people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if something happens outside of the gallery context or in your case, gallery museum context.
I still refer to it actually as a museum. Speaking about it, like in normal, because really that's our function, and I think that's a bit complicated for us. So you inherited the craft in your title, and I inherited the word gallery in my title, which I think does us a huge disservice.
Yeah, it does.
People.
We'll talk. I think maybe we have time. We'll talk a little bit
I'm
about
sure
that.
Sure, we will.
So craft Kentucky. It's about 35. The institution's about 35 years old, so it's older than your museum. I think it's important if you think about the position, about the trajectory that it's in. We were assessed by the American Alliance of Museums 2 years ago, and I was like talking to the woman who came to visit and talked to who was going to assess the museum. She's like, "Oh, your museum is so young." I was like, "Oh my gosh, really?" Because 30 years does not seem like that young to me. But there is a
when you're in a country where they've had museums for 150 years.
Yeah,
but
it's a big difference.
Yeah, yeah.
So I inherited the idea that craft was about tradition.
Right.
And when I thought about this job.
And about genteel tradition.
Yeah, certain
more or less.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, how do I think about that? Artists around the world are talking about process. They're talking about materials, and they're loading what they do politically, socially, economically. They're talking about ideas when they talk about those things. So a rock isn't a rock. You can actually a conch isn't a conch, right?
Of course not.
So you can actually sort of load the materials that artists are using with a different meaning, right?
Or, yeah.
And so when I thought about that, and I thought about what's happening around the world, I was like, this is an incredible opportunity to reposition craft in a contemporary context. And that's the nugget. That's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
But you've chosen to,
that.
In a way, by going to KMAC, you're actually kind of avoiding the word craft. So in a strange way, you're like embracing craft, but you're also kind of not wanting to embrace. You know what I mean? Because again, the word is so loaded.
It's so loaded, and that's the thing. And this is a dilemma that we were struck with. It's like
Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's not KFC because everyone wants to pretend it's not fried. But hey, we all know it's fried.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. Like, unfortunately, the word craft has so much meaning behind it that I will not change that in my lifetime.
Yeah,
and so I'm like, well, let's ignore this. Let's keep the name as close as we can to the original.
And keep the mission even in a weird way.
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
That mission
it's not about tradition and romanticizing something that doesn't exist anymore. But again, our mission is super simple. Connecting people to art and creative practice. That is all.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a great mission statement.
That's it. It's super sweet, super straightforward, and it rolls off the tongue. So, I'll loan it to you if you want.
Thank you.
But I do think that the way in which we can then elevate the craft, elevate mm-hmm. the idea of craft. I was talking to a young man last night who was making these incredible, I think these fascinating sculptures, walkable, wearable sculptures
right.
that we're going
to that you're going to see. Unfortunately, you haven't been to Junkanoo yet. No, we're going to go tonight.
That we've already seen last couple of weeks ago.
yes, but, exactly. We're in a time machine.
You know, and so those, I think he was talking about the moment the work was being shown, that one, you know, hour or 2 hours or 5 hours in the new year. And I was like, you know, you have an incredible process here. What you've done for the last 8 months is the art.
Yeah.
It's so much
again,
part
but
of that.
Again, you just hit the nail on the head, and we have to go to a quick break, but we'll pick it up when we come back, because there's another artist that we've done a show with who's known for his fine art practice as well as mm-hmm. Junkanoo practice, John Beadle. And, of course, he insists that, in fact, the whole work is he doesn't even go to the parade.
Yeah.
He's like, the parade's not, but it's interesting that a lot of the people making the costumes are still fixated on the parade.
Yeah.
And don't really understand the value of process and actually the value of the work they're doing and the way that you and I recognize that. So it's quite an interesting kind of issue, but we'll touch on that when we come back.
Good.
So we're going to go to a short break. I've got Aldi Milliken, the executive director and chief curator of KMAC Museum, which stands for the Kentucky Museum of Art and Craft. And we're really going to have this discussion about what is craft and what is art and how do they intersect. You're listening to The Blank Canvas. It's the show where we speak about visual culture and creative community and what is more creative than Junkanoo and community inspiring. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this short break.
Yeah. It's good, right?
You good?
Yeah.
You want to keep going?
Let's
you want to take
rocking.
A break? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We're going to keep on rolling.
Rolling. My voice is pretty good.
I know. It is good.
I sound husky.
It's so sexy. It's the honey. You know, we make our own honey now. I've got to bring you a jar. We make our own honey. Yeah. It's the Cat Island honey.
He
got off
honey.
The plane. He couldn't talk. He was like,
yeah. But I've had so
and
much
so
Cat
I've been,
Island honey.
I've been giving him honey for like 8 hours. Okay. Finish the show. Then we'll talk about the honey.
He's like, I gotta go.
He's like, I want to get out of here. Stop talking. All right.
Love the sound guy.
Engineer. Welcome back to the producer. Okay, starting again.
Yeah.
And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. I'm very privileged and honored to have Aldi Milliken in the studio with me tonight because he is running an awesome museum in Kentucky, in Louisville, Kentucky. He inherited the title of the museum, which is the Museum of Art and Craft. He's changed that to KMAC Museum in order to sort of stop people obsessing about what craft is and to, in a way, disengage from the traditional aspect, which we have a lot of the problem here, too, is a lot of people here think that art is about heritage.
Yeah.
And art is about history and culture being only historical culture and not contemporary culture. And it's quite difficult sometimes to convince, you know, Bahamians that, you know, this is Bahamian because it's made today by a Bahamian, you know, because there's this idea of heritage underpinning culture, which is, you know, valid, but of course culture constantly changes and constantly evolves.
Yeah, and it's important for it to do so.
Yes, and as institutions,
well,
we have to kind of capture different moments so that the historical record is reflected.
And future generations get inspired by previous generations?
Exactly.
And that's the key, I think. And that's the thing that we really think a lot about. And I know that you think a lot about that.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Because, you know, we have a collection. And do you have a collection?
We do have a collection.
You do, okay.
Yeah, we do.
And do you buy works from shows? Do you commission works? How does that work?
We do both. We actually the two most recent works that we've gotten were two African American artists, one from Jamaica, Ebony Patterson.
Oh, Ebony Patterson, she's awesome.
Just donated a work for us, and then
she's actually going to be participating in a show at the National Art Gallery at the end of April. We're having a show called En Masse, which is about performance and festival art in the Caribbean, and also that dirty word that we shouldn't talk about in the Bahamas, which is carnival, but also Junkanoo, and it's all about how those have impacted contemporary practice.
Yeah.
And how that's the original performance art. And it's also why I'm so excited you're here right now, because you've just done a kind of big cultural trip of Cuba.
Yeah.
But I'm so excited you're here right now at this time of year, because I wanted you to come anyway and see the museum and meet some of the artists, but that you're here for Junkanoo is a really meaningful
thing. No, it's a special thing. I mean, and I think if I connect it to Kentucky, we have outsider artists and a long history of untrained or non-university trained artists that are making incredible work, very intelligent work, that just doesn't fit into the university system. system. It doesn't fit into the museum structure that exists. The kind of the part of the museum or the gallery structure that we left actually a few years ago. But you know that that there's a lot of people out there that are doing incredible work
that have a very sophisticated use of color, volume.
Exactly.
And you spoke very eloquently to what you were witnessing last night. So it was your first time ever in a Junkanoo shack, and we're going to go do some more. We're going to go see some more shacks today. So you see some different.
I can really identify with a lot of the people that are making these works, because they want to share the intent of their ideas. They want to share their process. They started in March, and the work is not exposed until December, January.
But you spoke about it being like a wearable, moving sculpture.
Yeah, sculpture,
and that's what it is.
Yeah,
you know, it's an artwork that is not just gonna. In fact, it's even more of a challenge because the engineering challenge of being able to wear an artwork, being able to actually, because you'll see when we go to the actual rush, you know, the way they move, that also has a lot to do with it. The ribbons flying, the feathers, you know, the way that they sort of shake when someone's dancing, and
to
make a piece of artwork that can withstand that, you know, is really extraordinary. So,
and I think if we talk about it, sort of the expanded craft tradition. I mean, we are also doing a wearable art show. That's sort of why maybe I have a little bit of the language, because we do. One of the things that we implemented was a fashion show or a wearable art show. At Louisville is the home of the Kentucky Derby, and in May we have our Junkanoo. It's the women and the men dress up in these absurd costumes. It really, I mean, they're wonderful, but
they're not something you'd wear every day.
They're not something you wear every day. And
I didn't know there was like that part of
That part of it. Yeah, exactly. And it's very showy. It's definitely not as beautiful and ornate as the Junkanoo works that you find here. But there's sort of a theater too.
Now, does everybody do that, or is that just people going to the Derby?
It's pretty much going to the Derby, but it's 180,000 people. I mean, it's not a small group of people. It's a lot of people. And it's a whole 2 or 3 weeks of festivities. It's it's the Christmas of Kentucky. It's really, it's pageantry. It's absolutely incredible. So to kick it off, we do a wearable art show in which we work with artists throughout the year to educate them on how to make a garment and to explore certain ideas. This year, our theme is transient beings, so it's curated. It's a submission process that our curatorial staff is very much involved with, and it's very complicated. Who gets in? Who gets out? It's you want to be an artist in this particular show, and it's really extraordinary to see how people's perception of the role of the museum has changed just because of this whole process. They understand that the submission process, you know, happens in June or July, and we're doing a show all the way in the next April.
Yeah.
And that making art takes a long time.
A long time.
And a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And
that's what I always say. In a way, the process that the Junkanoo shacks go through. So they're sitting down, they talk, they, you know, throw ideas around, and then they go into the design. But, you know, really, all of that actually speaks to the museum.
Yeah.
Because people come to the museum and they see the show and they're like, they have no idea
that it takes that much.
What has gone on before.
Yeah.
And really, it's a very similar process. It's a 9-month to a year process. Sometimes in the show we have on now, 2 years to track down the works. So I think it's actually, I hadn't thought about it before, but I'm like, that process, that unseen process that happens in the Junkanoo shacks.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Like, how do we show that in the museum. I talked to a gentleman last night, and there was so much pride in his work about, you know, for that 1 or 2 hours or 5 hours or whatever the performance was.
Sure.
But he was talking about really 8 months of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's the art. No. And I was like, yeah, that's the art. And he's like, oh, wow, you're right. I mean, he's there with his friends. Mm-hmm. He's there very passionate about it. And I don't know. I think that's the challenge I think that we have is how do we bring that into the institution
that idea
without
of process.
Ruining
yeah,
it in
exactly.
a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like without institutionalizing it.
Sure. We had a show last year, the Ace of Spades, when Gus Cooper passed away, who was the founder and leader of one of the lead groups called the Valley Boys. And we asked this artist, John Beadle, who is known to be a fine artist and also a Junkanooer, to curate that show. And he was always talking about, you know, and he still is. I think he wasn't entirely happy with the final product, but right. he's a perfectionist, so he never is. God bless him.
Well, I think artists are.
And artists are, exactly. But, you know, he was always talking about, you know, for me, it's not the parade. It's the process. So yeah. one thing we did do was we actually created one of the rooms. We turned it into a shack.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we lined it with right. cardboard, and we had right. all the tools and whatever. And then actually I commissioned people to come in and actually make work. But the problem was that, you know, they've all got day jobs.
Yeah.
So it would have been great if they could have been doing that during the day.
So we did
so
the
people
same.
Could really see the yeah. practice because yeah. Because those guys, they were coming in at 5 o'clock at night. They were leaving at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, man. They were just knocking it out. And it's amazing to see. And you're right. It's like, how do you transmit that process? But then also, one nice thing that we recreated Gus's office. And there was a lot of the drawings and
right.
a lot of the books. Because
right.
they go to, you know, I mean, really, you go in there and you're like, this is actually kind of like university.
Right.
They're in there like with books out of the library, studying Egyptian culture, studying African culture, whatever it is that they're
right.
doing their theme on that
right.
week. And the whole community's learning about that.
Right.
So it's also like an educational process, which
no,
is really
absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it was, we did a show called Food, Shelter, Clothing, which looked at art and need, and we were able to win a grant from the Warhol Foundation that allowed us to pay for an artist to live in the space for 3 months.
And
she,
oh, wow.
It was basically her home. She did stay at our place when she wanted to.
Oh, that's
to,
amazing!
No, but she was in the museum for the whole time during the whole summer, and she would. She would bring in Kentucky wood carvers, or she would bring in people who were quilting. And so they were using traditional practice, but they were embedded in a contemporary context.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they could talk about color theory. They could talk about you know form,
yeah.
for instance. Form, huge in Junkanoo, right?
Huge.
So.
Yeah.
And color too, actually, if you're seeing some of these pieces. But so those things, that was how we did it. I wanted someone to activate the space. I wanted someone who was there who could say, hi, I'm an artist.
And this is what, you know, and I always wish we could do that for the museum. What we're
yeah.
doing right now, we have little videos that we're going to put on Facebook
where
we talk about our
way.
Jobs. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of people, they really don't know. Like a lot of people say, oh, it's Samantha, she's the chief curator. And sometimes
right.
I just don't bother to correct them, but I'm like, well, actually, I'm the director.
Right.
Which is
right.
a different, you're both, but, you know, I have a chief curator. You know,
yeah.
and we all actually have very specific roles.
Right.
And, you know, what does the assistant curator do? What does the registrar do? What does the development department do?
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Right. What was interesting with just go back a little bit about the role of the artist.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're talking about roles. But so the artist was in the space, and then the artist would attract other artists.
Interesting.
And then other
yeah.
people that I would never be able to meet, or I wouldn't even appreciate. You know, in our jobs, we get so many people that want to have exhibitions, that want to show in the museums, and we can't tailor shows to everybody, and that's hard. It's heartbreaking because a lot of people do great work, but you know, this woman would find ways to take the nuggets, the gems, the things that they were doing and incorporate it into her work and honor them. And so they felt like they were part of the artistic process. And so our
Amazing.
Network grew really,
yeah.
really well. And it was a fantastic couple of months. I think the other thing is that we can talk a little bit about is what is the role, what is the value of art? I mean, Louisville is an incredibly impoverished city in a sense. By looking at medium incomes, there's like $25,000, $30,000. That's the medium income for a Louisville citizen. So there's a number of people, 12%, 15% below the poverty line, you know, should they be going to an art museum? Should there be state funding for art museums? And I would say yes, obviously, because we need to find ways to activate people so that they're lifted out of their situation. The whole context of the Food, Shelter, Clothing exhibition was art is a basic need.
I agree. Oh my gosh, I agree with you.
So, there's Abraham Maslow has made a triangle that looked at basic needs, and food, shelter, and clothing are those basic needs. And I wanted to reimagine the triangle as a matrix where art was circling back. Art was the top of the pyramid for Maslow, and so we were like, no, art is actually part of that feedback loop. You need to have, I think of art as the highest form of communication. If you can't communicate, how do you address your basic needs? And that's where we were reaching people. We were evaluating that communication component.
Well, and also like sometimes even with the children, when they throw something on the floor, or they're, you know, being what I consider disrespectful to objects, because I feel like, you know, for me, art is also about valuing all objects. And I always say, you know, someone made that. Someone sat down and designed that.
Yep.
Someone,
yep.
even if they were in a factory,
yeah.
like pretty much every object, it's all made for a purpose.
Right.
You respect the object by using it for its purpose. Don't, you know, stick peas up your nose, you eat them, or whatever it is, you know, don't...
Well, I mean, if you look at wrappers on candy bars, or...
Repurpose them, right?
Yeah,
then repurpose
exactly.
them. We have these awesome tires, furniture on our veranda, which you've seen, made by artist Candace Marshall. She's got a group called Mega Mergers, and what they do is they find material that normally would go into our landfill. We have a big problem with our landfill here. Constantly on fire and constantly. And she's making furniture. So, like, how do you think about repurposing objects?
Well, there's a great Kentucky artist that walks the... we have rivers. We don't have beautiful beaches. We have rivers. So the Ohio River flows through our city. And there's an artist that walks down to the river and picks up a lot of the detritus, a lot of the debris that has been cast off. And he finds so many different plastic bottles or pieces of foam or sticks.
Unfortunately, our beaches are full of that stuff, too.
And he makes incredible work out of it. I mean, it's really pretty interesting. Yeah. And he's done a whole color palette of, you know, the plastic bottles that were thrown away. I mean, it's a beautiful sort of rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, it's garbage, but it's also he's found a way to repurpose it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that's so fascinating with artists is that they're able to think outside the box. They're able to reposition and make us think in new ways.
Yeah, exactly. And which is why they're so important for the community. So I always say the NNGB is a creative think tank because, you know, artists, even if you think, oh, I don't want my kid to be an artist, artists help us look at the world in a different way and find solutions to things.
You're a better banker if you're a good artist.
Well, I think so. Or at least if you appreciate art. You're a better engineer. You're a better mathematician.
Yeah.
So you know what? But
I
love... I'm going to repeat that statistic.
Yeah.
Test scores go up 10% if you look at art twice a year. If you go to the museum.
Go to the museum
twice a year. So I'm going to leave our listeners with that thought while we go to a short break. Test scores go up 10%, people. So visit the museum at least twice a year, and that's going to help all your kids. So you are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Colton. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and I'm in the studio tonight with Aldie Milliken from the KMAC Museum in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, rather. I know, I'm like getting all my estates and things disorganized. You are listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio, and we are going to be right back after this short break.
You good.
For another 20 minutes, and then you can pee on the way out?
Okay. Yep. Was that 20 minutes?
20 minutes. That last one was 15. It's 15, 15, 20.
All right. Okay. So what do you want to hit on this time?
Oh, I don't know. We'll just keep going. Well, let's talk about your programming. I think interesting that the first show you did was Caribbean. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
And the idea of the Caribbean and some of the artists you've worked with.
Sure.
Because, you know, people love to hear that you value what we have here, too. So.
Yeah, I have to go back and remember.
I know,
that show.
I know.
So long ago.
I know. Do you want to Google it?
Yeah, let me Google it.
Okay. Do you want to Google it?
Yeah.
Okay, so radar, what? Oh, no, stop.
Oh.
I know, that's what happens when I get to the end of my session.
That's like...
Okay.
If you don't wait a minute, I'm not quite there yet. That'll take me a second. Because Jeanine Anthony was in that show.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's...
Blue Curry, obviously, you know, was in that show.
And Heino was in the show.
Heino was in the show.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that... We can talk a little bit about that. You say it's difficult for you, the contextual thing, why it's important to bring the national, international, the regional into your show,
exactly.
into your space.
Yeah.
I think you can't.
You can't operate in a vacuum.
You can't, and that you're doing a disservice to the institution and the artists and the community if you don't.
Good thing we're on a break. Didn't turn my phone.
We're just chatting. Still coming up. The internet's not fast here.
No, it's not. I mean, that's just, it's not every day. That's just, I think, now. Have you got it?
Not yet.
He's just waiting for a Google page to come up and then, hey, honey. Hey. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Colson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can always stream us live from your computer, or you can download the app and stream us from your handheld device. You go to www.guardiantalkradio.com. You can either click the live stream button, or you can download the app as well, and send text messages and things like that. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NAGBlankCanvas, and look at all our guests and leave comments. Nice comments, please. Or just give us a thumbs up, right? Yes. So tonight in the studio, I have Aldie Milliken, who is a very dear friend, former colleague, well, still a colleague, and he is the executive director and chief curator at KMAC Museum in Louisville, Kentucky. The C of KMAC is dealing with craft, and so it's art and craft. So you're really, again, looking at ways those two things intersect. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you started, we started at the same time.
Yes,
so we called each other, and I was like, oh, my God, I got a job offer. And you were like, oh, my God, I got to work in a museum. Oh, my God. And we were calling and saying, oh, should we? And how big is your budget? And how many people do you have? And how are you dealing with this? So it was kind of funny. And you inherited a show that had already sort of been put into motion.
Yeah, it was
and you were expected to execute. And that actually involved the Caribbean. Not only were we sharing our experiences of, because we'd both worked at sort of really for ourselves.
Yeah.
And suddenly we had to deal with boards and other people and staff and all these things. So we were sort of talking about that.
And programs.
And programming and things exactly, and inheriting things. But we also were talking quite a lot because you were like, oh my God, I need some good Caribbean artists. Can you help me out? And
so it's kind of interesting. I mean, I was, before I moved to Kentucky, I was in Stockholm, Sweden, mm-hmm. which again is about as different from this environment as possibly can be. And so I was given this the program, and the first show was NEA-funded, National Endowment of the Arts-funded exhibition. I think we received $40,000 from the state to put on a show of Caribbean art, and I was like, wow. I have got no idea. This is an incredibly diverse, culturally dynamic region that I cannot talk about. I cannot explain. So, I obviously called you immediately and said, hey, help me out here. And you were also maybe in a – you come from here. You know people
here.
Well,
I knew my own art scene, but I didn't know the region. You know,
that's
important.
Hard. Yeah. And so that was the thing. And it was a shame in a way to start the first show that way, because I knew I had to stand in front of a board. I'd been there, I arrived 3 weeks the show was on. It was that little time, and I basically was given the show, and I when I saw the artist list and I saw the intent, I was like, I can't do that. I cannot stand in front of my public, the world, my art scene, and say this is what the Caribbean stands for.
So what is it that you inherited? I'm curious.
Well, it was very much I think about tradition.
Yeah,
it was about
a
tradition.
Again,
like, what do tourists want? How do tourists see the Bahamas?
Right.
Is that the true Bahamas? Is that the way people are here culturally? I would say no. There's a lot more complex and a lot more dynamic than that.
Right.
And so there's no way that I could, show sort of a romanticized picture of the beach landscape, from Trinidad. I mean, this wasn't going to happen for me. So the strategy I use, and I think about the strategy a lot today, is you find the people who know something about the region. For me, it was people like you, curators, but also especially artists.
Mm-hmm.
Fine artists.
Oh, yeah. Artists are always the best people to ask about other artists.
So we basically collaborated on the show. Mm-hmm. I would not say that I really curated that show.
Mm-hmm.
I found the right people to talk to. I found the right people to invite to Kentucky. And again, I luckily had this generous budget to work with.
And I think, didn't some Bahamians come out there? I think they did,
Blue Curry came out.
Blue Curry came out. I think Hino, did he come out?
Hino could not come out.
But he sent work, yeah.
But a lot of interest, a lot of artists did. I think Christopher Cozier from Trinidad came out.
Yeah.
A writer, Nicholas
Loughlin. Yeah, sure. Fantastic guy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so I used people like that, I collaborated with people like that to have them tell their stories. And then their stories represented the true cultural identity of a region.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that museums should tell people about culture. I think we should ask questions about culture and then let people decide what kind of cultural history they want to explore,
mm-hmm.
or they want to
mm-hmm.
identify with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we give options. We give we inspire sort of thinking about what it is to be from Trinidad, what it means to be from Cuba, what it means to be from the Bahamas.
Well, and also you're going to ask five different people. I mean, we went through this during the 40th anniversary celebrations, which were just 2 years ago, but there was this big question of, like, what does it mean to be Bahamian?
Yeah.
And, actually there was a really interesting artist that you should look at who, in fact, bringing the conversation back to what we were speaking about before, he got into Tyler School of Art, which, as you know, is an awesome school of art, on his junketing portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, on his design portfolio. And he's now doing, you know, immersive, interactive sculptures and social sculpture.
Everything going on in a junketing sculpture is going on in performance art, contemporary performance art, et cetera.
Yeah. So he did this awesome piece called Disui Tea Party.
Oh, nice.
And he had 40 tea conversations with 40 different Bohemians. And they ranged from...
I think I saw that piece.
Yeah, you might have done.
Part of that piece when you did an exhibition.
That's right. Well, you saw another version, Black No Sugar.
Yeah, he did
in Vienna. Yeah. We took him to Vienna, and he did another kind of version of the thing, talking to people.
I mean, it's extraordinary. Here, no, so I'm going to go quickly into that. But you're...
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk more about that piece, but you are now showing Bohemian artists internationally.
Yes.
That is pretty interesting, I think.
How are
Bohemian artists perceived? I mean, is it exoticized, or is it something that
definitely people come with the idea of the exotic, and they are very often then surprised, but normally pleasantly surprised, because I think the general idea is, you know, we're all fairly naive, and maybe there's going to be a bit of nice outsider art, and maybe a bit of nice beach art, but, you know, perhaps not as sophisticated.
So it is
so sophisticated, and I think that's kind of a bit of a surprise, and I think part of that is our own issue. You know, we use tourism to promote our, you know, what we say, touching on exactly what you were saying, what is our culture?
Yeah.
You know, we put out this idea of what our quote-unquote culture is, and then really, does that actually reflect our everyday reality?
So you continue to do projects like the one
definitely,
you did in Vienna?
Definitely. The one in Vienna is going to travel to Leipzig afterwards, going to go to the Bahnhof Spinnerei, and then we hope it'll have one more stop and then come back home. And I definitely like to have more shows travel, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I'm hoping that you're going to be so inspired by Junkanoo, you might wrap that into some future show.
Absolutely.
But again, it's also about, you know, collaborations and people coming, inviting a lot of... I mean, I have a lot of people that I invite down.
Right.
Many of them are dear friends like yourself.
Yeah.
That, you know, we've been friends for 20 years, 25 years, other friends that are all in the business.
Yeah.
And, you know, the great thing about our quote-unquote culture is everyone's like, great, I want to go hit the beach. So you invite them down for what is ostensibly a vacation, but then, you know, like yourself, I make them work for a day.
I don't want to go to the beach. I want to see more work.
You do, I know, you're like, I know, it really is.
You know what I mean? Like,
and
I,
you know what
awesome.
Then all those people take out with them, right?
Yeah,
so there's things happening for artists now that I'm not even, all I did was invite a curator down.
Right, right.
And so often artists are like, I meet international artists and where are you? Oh, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. Oh, do you have an artist in residence program? Because every artist wants a show.
Right.
And I always say, you know, we don't need more artists down here. We need dealers. We need curators.
Yeah.
We need people to see what's happening and take that out into the world.
Right.
What's been very useful is, again, as you know, because we met at an art fair. We met in Art Berlin when I was working at a gallery.
Yep.
You had your own gallery.
Yep.
Is that I've been able, because of the fair that I founded, I've been able to position Bohemian artists within that context.
Right.
And that's been very helpful. So some of them are picking up now galleries. So, you know, I think it's a very untraditional role for a museum director.
Yeah.
And I have... some people on my board that have served on boards of international museums, and they are very confused sometimes by what I do. They're like, I don't really get, why are you doing that again? But, you know, they're thinking, I'm not the Guggenheim.
Right.
So, you know, like,
right.
I'm not acting the way Thomas Krenz is acting, because I've got a very different thing I've got to deal with. And I didn't know if you had, because you and I in the kitchen this morning, we were talking a little bit about, like, how do we show the world what we're doing? How do we bring the world to see the shows we're doing, the artists we have?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing, because it's
it
not
is.
Like if we're sitting at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London or the National Art Gallery, like, you're going to get your 800,000 visitors a year just because.
Right.
But, you know, we're not getting that.
Right.
So how do we do that? And part of that is, of course, engaging with people from outside.
Yeah.
And also inviting artists from outside, because you also touched on that.
Yeah.
That artists are very often the most crucial people. And my husband, who was a former dealer, always said, if I wanted to know who was an interesting artist to look at, I would go ask my artists.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are in the studios.
Well, you do a great service to the artists, to the local artists here, by bringing sort of international artists who are, they have to be selected, I think, but they have a relationship to the cultural identity of the region, or they're working on issues of race or of
economy. Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that they're actually going to work, maybe produce a piece that your art handlers who are artists, or your other artists who might help produce. We did a show with Simone Lee, and we invited artists to help produce a piece of her work, and so that they had a conversation about art production.
Right, exactly.
And they learned a lot from her and how about how she staged an exhibition.
Right. So there's a sculptor who wants to come down here and make a piece and donate it to the nation, and it's been a bit of a control, you know, like the ministry, like, well, I don't know, why do we want a British artist? And she's actually of African origin. But the thing is, she works in this really interesting way, like with metal, you know, and we have an artist here who's got his whole, like, welding studio at the back of his house. And I think for them to, like, work together
Absolutely.
Would be so beneficial
it's
for
incredible.
Both of them.
Yeah, it would.
So
yeah.
It's not this thing of, I think there's also this fear of, like, when you bring people in, it's like that you're being paternalistic. Or like, you don't know what you're doing.
So
let me bring in a foreigner.
Simone,
and, you know, but
Simone
yeah.
Lee Project. So, yeah. So Simone, we commissioned the pieces. She sketched them and articulated them. She found a Kentucky craftsman. They worked, they made the piece together. She was so happy with that work that she commissioned three or four more of those pieces that were then shown in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So again, when those works are shown in New York, they also represent Kentucky culture,
right.
Kentucky craftsmanship,
mm-hmm.
or craftspersonship. So that is a win for us.
Craftsmanship.
Yeah, I don't know if that works. Craftsmanship. So that completely represents that person.
Yeah.
They're representing Kentucky.
The
handmade.
Yeah.
All this, you know, all that we
and the history
about.
That the tradition
absolutely.
Has been handed down.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I do think there's a lot for people to gain here, for your museum to introduce internationally respected artists, because they will bring a whole new awareness to the internet, mm-hmm. the international art community.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our biggest problem from Louisville is Louisville's in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
We literally are an island in the middle of an enormous nation.
Yeah.
And the way that which we can get people like Lynn Cook, a curatorial staff, or Glenn Adamson, who's the Museum of Art and Design, all these people, we invite them to do projects. We invite them mm-hmm. to speak. Artists hear them. Artists learn from them. We learn from them. And then we have all these ideas, and then we just explode.
But again,
out.
I think also really important to underscore is we learn from them, but then also they learn from us.
Yeah.
That it's
not
it's not a top down. It's not like, coming in to share. It's because, you know, again, like you said, your Kentucky Crossman probably showed her a thing or two, right?
Absolutely. And, no, she...
And I think, you know, our Junkanoo artists could show a lot of contemporary artists
Absolutely.
Working a thing or two because their dedication to their craft is
Absolutely.
So extraordinary.
And I think that...
So it's really about exchange. It's about cultural exchange.
Absolutely.
And dialogue and, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hope that you're able to... You have the autonomy that to do your program the mm-hmm. way you see it. And I think that's super important that politicians and the economic forces that we have do not dictate our program. And that's kind of key. When we have an idea, I do not think about how much it will cost until the idea is articulated.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think who I'm going to make mad at the museum who is going to be
I try not.
Annoyed.
I mean, I always know who I'm going to make mad, but I try not to think about it.
No, I think you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you're building a respected institution.
Right, yeah.
And that respected institution has to be autonomous. You're doing a service to mm-hmm. the community, and that community is so diverse that there's no way
well,
you're
going to
capture
everybody.
Well,
and that's the thing. Again, it's always about diversity, so you can never please everybody all the time. Because like you said, of course we have a contingent of people. The people you described at the very beginning of the show that used to have a real, like, slice of the pie at your museum. This, you know, a lot of, like, privileged ladies that have this idea, this very genteel idea of what craft is for them, which is sitting around doing needlework or doing whatever, which doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the country. So, of course, you know, I have different factions, and some people are like, why do you do more shows like this? And then you put on a show like that, and everyone's like, oh, you're the show we have on right now, the Brent Malone show, which is extraordinary.
It is great,
Again, there's a lot of people living in the community that maybe won't get that show, even though it's very traditional, because it is it's oil painting. You study in England, then you have to do a show that's you know, that's more populist, but then, you know, a bunch of other people are going to dislike. So in a way, you have to just be like, okay, listen, look at the program over the year.
Yeah.
And you'll see that there's something for everybody in there. You know, there's always the realist calling me up and saying, oh, you got too much of that weird contemporary stuff. And I'm like, oh, but didn't you not see the Eddie Minnis show? Did you not see the Brent Malone show?
Yeah.
So, you know, and then the conceptuals will say, oh, you just did such a boring show last time, and you do a great job
of making catalogs. That's the one thing that we have not been able to do as much. We don't have the money to do for the big catalogs.
Right.
But that is also, I think, you know, you're writing art on art history.
Yeah,
you're
and it's important for us because we don't have
great.
Exactly. So for us, it's very important. important to continue making catalogs. We just sent all the schools that were hit by Hurricane Joaquin, we just sent them the full complement of our catalogs. We try to get them into all the schools.
Yeah.
We try to give them to places of educate, libraries. And, you know,
so how did that work? Did artists donate money? To donate works that were then bid on, and then you gave the money to the hurricane.
No, we just get sent all like catalogs to the schools and things
like that.
Great.
So,
obviously, like, we're always broke, so we can't give anyone money. But we try to support in other ways, you know.
Yeah.
So we do a lot with schools. We do a lot, but, you know, it's with our knowledge, with the things we can bring
right.
that are in our brains. Or because you'd be surprised. I mean, some of the art schools here on the Out Islands.
Right.
You know, I went to visit a couple, and I mean, not art schools, but like high schools, and the kids are learning graphic arts and things, and they've got an old newspaper, and the picture in the newspaper is the image they're learning their art history from.
Right.
You know,
then
when
right.
you bring them like a full color catalog
right.
of a Bahamian artist
right.
or 20 Bahamian artists, I mean, that's right. like mind blowing.
Right.
So, you know.
Oh, that's extraordinary. That's mm. awesome, isn't it? That you think of that. It doesn't actually take much to inspire someone.
It doesn't.
You just have to think in the right way to get people in that. To appreciate those the images or the ideas that you're sending to them.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say one last thing about the old ladies that are they are now my biggest supporters.
Yeah,
the biggest supporters of the museum. They see that we've increased attendance double. So now we're probably 30,000 to 40,000 visitors. We go to schools. We have a mobile museum project, which they're basically suitcases
mm-hmm.
that are little museums that travel to the schools.
Oh, awesome.
That have art
okay,
in
I'm
them.
Okay, I'm stealing that idea.
You should definitely steal that idea. It's a fantastic idea. Call it a mobile museum. That reaches 50,000
yeah.
kids in the schools. So the teachers, it has a teacher's curriculum guide. It has videos, DVDs, artworks, treasure hunts, all these different programs
yeah.
and
yeah.
ideas that you can work with, and they go out in the community, and it's like for Kentucky, it's $50.
Yeah,
you know, and that's not that much money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so everyone can have a mobile museum. That is KMAC.
Yeah.
You know, in a suitcase.
That's a suitcase. Awesome idea.
So you should take that, and I'm sure someone will write a grant for you to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure.
Your listeners, I'm sure there's some listeners out there that will help
exactly.
support the museum.
There you
that
go.
Is a fantastic project.
Yay!
And also our education program. We do a lot of education, like 3,000 to 5,000 kids with 4 or 5 teachers and maybe a contract staff of about 15 to 20 teachers to go out
wow.
to the schools. So we
oh
have a
God.
Pretty aggressive in the schools. Yeah, it's
that's
super
amazing.
Important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're trying. We have our education staff is all of 2 people, but they're doing
you're
an awesome
there.
Job. And,
yeah.
and, you know, definitely we create teachers' packets and things like that, too. So, Aldi, listen, it's been so amazing to have you here. It's always so great to meet a colleague and
talk
get
museums,
ideas
talk
and
stuff,
exactly
yeah.
talk museums and what we can do. And it's interesting how, you know, and I think that's also why it's important to talk to people from outside, because very often you think your problems are all your own.
Yeah.
Whether you're an artist living in the Bahamas, you're a museum director
yeah.
living in the Bahamas, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you start talking to other people from, you know, you think, oh, the United States has everything. And, you know, faced with a lot of the same problems
yeah.
with how do you build your community? How do you make the museum relevant to a population which has historically been disengaged from the institution?
Yeah.
And it's always kind of like a feeling of like brotherhood. You know, you're like, oh,
hey,
we're all in this
I
together.
Think, you know, and I see the Junkanoo works, and I love my job.
Yeah.
We are so fortunate to talk about art,
yeah.
to talk with artists, and to translate our passion for this, for what is an incredibly creative and
yeah.
dynamic group,
yeah.
society.
Yeah, we are. So we're going to now say goodbye to everyone. I'm going to take you to some more Junkanoo Shacks because we did tape the show
it.
Like a couple weeks ago from when it's airing. But hey, thanks for coming and thanks
Thank
for joining
you.
Us tonight.
Great
Aldi
to
Milliken,
you.
The Executive Director and Chief Curator of KMAC Museum in Louisville, Kentucky. You have been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the Director of the National Art Gallery. We still have the Brent Malone retrospective on. You should definitely go see it if you haven't already. You're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio, and that's it for tonight. Thank you for listening, and good evening.